You are listening to the Audio Information Network of Colorado. This recording is intended to be used solely by individuals with barriers to print.
This is the Audio Information Network of Colorado. My name is Nancy, and you are listening to the Environment Program. Starting out with conservation news, science, and inspiration, a world view. The first blurb is Gift of Water. On the windward slopes of Maui's dormant Haleakala volcano, the lush 9,000-acre Waikamu Preserve is a place to drink in Hawaii's tropical wonders. Blue Opalu lobelia blossom in summer's warmest months, and rainforest songbirds treat visitors to a spirited chorus. Waikamu's healthy forests also absorb water like a sponge. A new University of Hawaii economic study estimates that over the next century, the Waikamu Preserve will protect 63.7 billion gallons of clean water, half of it groundwater destined for local homes and businesses, at a projected value of $36.2 million. The next blurb, green space. Shenzhen, China, is a dense city with a lot of hard surfaces. Not a surprise for a place that has exploded from a population of 30,000 in 1979 to more than 10 million in 2018. Without much room for traditional parks, the neighborhood of Ganxia is carving out space for nature on one of its rooftops. The Nature Conservancy worked with volunteers to outfit the roof with 410 planters, filling them with native plants that should thrive in the region's humid climate. In keeping with the Chinese government's Sponge City program, which has the goal of making cities absorb more stormwater, as much as 65% of the Ganxia building's stormwater runoff is absorbed by the green roofscape. Kalahari's Oasis. In 2018, the Nature Conservancy teamed up with the National Geographic Society and a commission that works with three countries' governments to protect the waters of the Okavango Delta, one of Africa's largest seasonal desert oases. The delta, which supports big cats and endangered slaty egrets, plus the continent's largest remaining population of elephants, is located in Botswana's portion of the Kalahari Desert. But the Okavango River, which floods the nearly 7,000-square-mile oasis every year, gets most of its water from rains that fall in Angola. The partnership will use the Nature Conservancy's Global Water Fund work as a model for conserving lands upriver in the watershed to ensure the delta continues to receive enough water. Focused fishing. In the Pacific Northwest, ling cod and its cousin, the yellow-eye rockfish, share the same rocky seafloor habitat. That presents a problem for commercial fishers because while the ling cod population is healthy, yellow eyes are overfished and subject to tight quotas. Rather than risk catching rockfish, many fishing boats avoid ling cod altogether. But there's a twist. Ling cod are voracious predators with an appetite for rockfish. Catching more ling cod could help rockfish recover, a win-win for fishers and the ecosystem. Nature Conservancy researchers in Oregon and Washington are now collaborating with the local fishing community to design traps that selectively target ling cod. This year, local and tribal fishers in both states are testing the latest iteration, a trap with openings that allow smaller species such as rockfish to escape. The project would be impossible without the help of fishers, says the Nature Conservancy's Garrett Dallin, a community relations manager in Washington. You can't do this with a model or in a laboratory, he says. You have to get out there on the ocean and see what happens. Busy beavers. The humble beaver shapes its world, which is also our world. And herein lies the crux of journalist Ben Goldfarb's new book, Eager, The Surprising Secret Life of Beavers and Why They Matter. Humanity has misunderstood beavers for centuries, argues Goldfarb, dipping into science and history with plenty of his own immersive reporting. He explores how beavers have shaped much of North America, Europe, and Asia. Beaver dams slowed and widened rivers, which replenished groundwater, formed fish ponds, and enriched valley bottom soils. Goldfarb also introduces readers to an intriguing cast of characters: scientists, ranchers, and beaver believer volunteers who are working to reestablish the animals. Now, in the second decade of the 21st century, it's we who need their help, he writes. And the beavers? They're still eager. Rocky roads. In Wyoming, more than 5,000 mule deer are killed by vehicles each year. A dangerous situation for both drivers and deer that costs $50 million in damages annually. Yet a recent study may have stumbled upon a simple solution: white posts. Wildlife crossing structures, such as wide tunnels, effectively prevent wildlife collisions, but they are expensive to build. In a study for the Wyoming Department of Transportation, Nature Conservancy scientist Corinna Reginas tested a cheaper option: reflectors that amplify headlights to warn deer away from roads. To compare crossings with and without reflectors, her team shrouded some of the devices in white canvas bags to obscure them. Though the reflectors were moderately helpful in spooking deer away from the roads, the white bags, meant to cover reflectors and act as a control in the study, were superior. The bags reduced deer deaths 33% more than the reflectors. Deer raise their tails to warn about predators, exposing a white patch on their rumps, says Reginas. It's possible the white bags looked like a warning sign of some sort. More research is needed, she says, to see if deer become accustomed to the color white over time. If not, white posts could be a low-cost way to give deer fair warning. Tidal change. In the far-off places where commercial fishing boats brave the seas, the men and women at the helm can feel the switch of the tide and sense a shifting wind. Staying alert to change is what they do. When they meet up on the docks, conversation usually touches on fish prices and engine mechanics. And now talk often turns to climate and the changes they're seeing on their fishing grounds. These voices have seldom reached beyond coastal ports, but they are increasingly being heard elsewhere. In November of 2018, the Nature Conservancy interviewed people from Alaska and the Pacific Coast about climate change and the fishing life. Listen to fishers' stories about making a living on the water, their growing fears of what climate change means for the industry, and their commitment to protecting a way of life at nature.org/tidal change. A different breed. Climate change looms large at the Dugout Ranch, a 5,200-acre property in southern Utah acquired by the Nature Conservancy in the 1990s and converted into a conservation research center. The ranch controls grazing permits on 500 square miles of adjacent public lands, but researchers warn that native grasses, the mainstay of grazing cattle, will decline under warming conditions. One option being tested at the ranch, a different breed of cattle. In 2018, the Conservancy's Matt Redd, who manages the ranch and the Canyonlands Research Center, added 10 Criollo cows to his herd. Typically, U.S. herds consist of Angus or other European cattle. Criollo are descended from Spanish cattle brought to Mexico and may be better suited to drier climates. Researchers report that Criollo travel farther for water and eat a more diverse diet than Angus. Building on 15 years of research by the Jornada Experimental Range and New Mexico State University, the dugout team and Canyonlands researcher Mike Dunaway fitted 10 Criollo and 10 Angus with GPS collars in October of 2018 and are now tracking where they graze. The first stage is to infer what their impact might be on the desert, Dunaway says. The second stage, analyze their poo to figure out what they've been eating. With climate change making the future of ranching less certain, he says, it's exciting to look at new possibilities for mitigating its effects. And from the travel section, Wild About Art, three ways to get creative outdoors. 1. Have a brush with nature. Plein air artists have been practicing mindfulness since long before it became a buzzword, closely observing and responding to their natural surroundings. Changing light and conditions can make painting outdoors a challenge, but you don't need to be Renoir to enjoy it. The process is as much about capturing the essence of a scene as creating gallery-worthy artwork. Many of the landscapes protected by the Nature Conservancy have inspired artists and make perfect spots to set up an easel. One of them, the Nature Conservancy Preserve on part of Andy Warhol's former Montauk, New York seaside property, even offers art-related programs to the public. Travel tips. Art al fresco. Get started painting on plein air with a portable easel and basic supply kit. Medium matters. Some plein air painters prefer to work in watercolor because it dries quickly and lends itself to quick, loose brushwork. Weather alert. Note how temperature and humidity affect your medium. For example, desert climates may require extra water. See the light. Pay attention to how the sun and atmosphere affect your scene. Try to rough in shadows and highlights first. The second suggestion for getting creative with nature is get behind the lens. With quality digital cameras becoming more affordable and smartphone cameras improving each year, landscape photography is more popular than ever. To up your photography game, plan to shoot when the lighting or weather conditions will create the desired effect. Golden hour, just before sunset or after sunrise, is a good bet, but fog or cloud patterns also can add interest to a landscape. Try changing your perspective, getting a lower or higher angle, or finding a foreground shape to add depth. And don't forget the detail shots. Patterns in rocks or colonies of moss make for fascinating landscapes in miniature. Photographing wildlife has its own challenges and rewards. One surefire photo opportunity is the annual gathering of sandhill cranes at the Platte River Prairies in Nebraska, where the Nature Conservancy and the National Audubon Society protect habitat and where visitors can gather on viewing platforms. And the third suggestion for getting creative with nature is write about it. The best way to beat a case of writer's block? Step away from the computer screen and get outside. Whether you're conjuring the next great novel or keeping a journal just for yourself, a change of scenery and some fresh air can often jumpstart the creative juices. Writing in and about nature can be beneficial in its own right, sharpening your observations and calming distracting thoughts. 3 cool structures. These masterworks take their cues from their natural surroundings. Falling Water, Pennsylvania. Often considered Frank Lloyd Wright's most beautiful design, this unique home, sited over a waterfall, is acclaimed for its integration with the landscape. It's now a museum, and visitors can tour the buildings and grounds. Spiral Jetty, Utah. In 1970, sculptor Robert Smithson constructed a 1,500-foot-long coil on the shore of the Great Salt Lake. The famous earthwork is still visible and open to the public, though the site has no visitor facilities. Throwncorn Chapel, Arkansas. Designed by architect E. Fay Jones in 1980 as an inspiring place to take in the beauty of the Ozarks, the soaring, light-filled structure was named one of the American Institute of Architects' top 10 buildings of the 20th century. Next, Powering Green Tech. An unprecedented partnership is deploying the tools of the tech boom to help solve global conservation challenges by Curtis Runyon. It's a sunny July morning in Denver, Colorado, where a group of leaders from 10 tech startup companies has converged in a huge open office to talk business. The room, part of a complex that was once a taxicab call center, is buzzing, and the row of silver coffee carafes along the wall have all been drained. To kick things off, the t-shirt-clad teams circle up on couches and padded chairs to share their company elevator pitches with each other about who they are, why they were selected to be here, and what their startup tech companies can do, especially if they can attract the attention of big investors. It's a scene straight out of Silicon Valley, one that the tech sector has made into something of an art form by mentoring entrepreneurs and then connecting them up with investors looking to get in early on the next big thing. There's even a name for the process, the Technology Accelerator. But this group in Denver is playing for higher stakes than your average tech guru looking to cash in on a new phone app or digitally connected kitchen appliance. These entrepreneurs have gathered together not only to secure funding for a new business idea, but to try, each in their own way, to save the world. Aaron Rothman, the CEO of a company called Storm Sensor, stands up to give her pitch. Every year in the United States, 32 trillion gallons of stormwater runoff are generated by storms, she says. That runoff is the number one cause of pollution in urban areas. We're talking everything from chemical pollutants to raw sewage being flushed into our surface waters. That's insane. Turns out that Rothman started her career as an environmental consultant. But after a decade of listening to city officials complain about the lack of affordable tools for tracking polluted stormwater from their sewers into neighboring waterways, she decided to jump into the startup world and create her own solution. By installing a network of low-cost sensors that transmit data about flow and temperature in city sewers, she says her company can give cities the tools that they need to identify, track, and predict and prevent pollution in real time. She wraps up to a round of applause, and right away the other startup leaders pepper her with questions. How will you make money? It's a subscription service where the city pays monthly for the data. Have you tested it? Yes, in Jersey City, New Jersey, and two other cities. Do you have any competitors? Yes, but their sensors cost roughly 10 times more than ours. Following Rothman, each CEO steps up in turn to present both a serious environmental challenge and a vision for using technology to tackle it. A team from the company Node presents a plan to roll out prefabricated, sustainable, and super efficient housing. The co-founders of This Fish share their system that will help stop illegal and unsustainable fishing practices by digitally tracking fish from catch to plate. The CEO of Sustain presents a software package that helps companies reward good environmental habits in the workplace, such as recycling or turning off lights. The notion of using technology to solve critical problems all while making a profit is not a new one, but it hasn't often been applied to big environmental challenges. In fact, this meeting is a first-of-its-kind mashup between the technology startup community and a conservation organization. It's the result of a new partnership between the Nature Conservancy and the TechStars Global Network of Entrepreneurs to host a sustainability accelerator focused on cultivating entrepreneurial innovation to help out nature. With growing threats from climate change, water shortages, and other environmental challenges, the time is right to engage with TechStars and the creative startup community, says August Ritter, the Conservancy's Accelerator Program Director. Tech has disrupted so many other industries. It's time for technology to disrupt our industry. We want to see things happening faster, says Ritter. For the Conservancy, it's about how do we get more entrepreneurs and technologists building companies that solve conservation problems that actually matter. TechStars was founded in 2006 in Boulder, Colorado, and has since set up tech accelerators around the world. The company has mentored some 1,600 companies and has helped them raise more than $6 billion in investments. We do everything really fast, says Jenna Walker, TechStars Managing Director for the 2018 Sustainability Accelerator in Denver. It's been a month since the company founders first gathered, and Walker has been in the trenches every day working to advance the prospects of each company. In the past week, we have had hundreds of mentor meetings come through this building, says Walker, calling it a feat of not only scheduling but brain power. An accelerator typically brings together a class of 10 startup company founders for a 3-month intensive program. In exchange for granting TechStars a 6% share in their company, the founders will get the chance to meet with hundreds of CEOs, investors, industry innovators, and other mentors who will help rapidly advance the startup's growth and ability to attract investment seed money. Within the broad community of startups, there is a failure rate of about 80 to 85%, says the Conservancy's Ritter. That number is flipped for companies that participate in TechStars. 80 to 85% succeed. At the end of the 3-month accelerator, the entrepreneurs give their new and improved pitches in a public presentation for potential investors at an event called Demo Day. The Sustainability Accelerator represents a significant shift for TechStars. Lots of entrepreneurial energy is spent on things that don't really have much impact on the world, says TechStars co-founder Brad Feld. So it felt very powerful to reflect on the idea of actually doing entrepreneurial ventures with the Conservancy while also helping the next generation of companies create viable, successful businesses doing something that helps change the world. It is also unlike anything the Conservancy has done before. Through this partnership, the Conservancy is trying to figure out how to take advantage of technology breakthroughs to accelerate progress for our mission, said the Conservancy CEO Mark Tursik. When we look at the threats to the natural world, we can't help but conclude that we've got to pick up the pace, he says. We have to do more, be better, be faster. As a result, the Conservancy is hosting the accelerator at the Denver office and has lined up a number of the volunteer mentors who will help the company founders, including staff scientists, policy leaders, trustees, and even marketing experts. In addition, the Conservancy has already started in on pilot projects with 6 of the tech companies. And the group of companies in the Sustainability Accelerator is just the start. At least 2 more are planned for 2019 and 2020. 3 months after completing the accelerator in Denver, Storm Sensor's Erin Rothman seems a bit shell-shocked by the new pace of her life. "I just pitched a group of investors," she says on a Friday morning at 9 a.m. in January. Having completed Techstars, though, she believes she could probably give her pitch in her sleep. "We've raised more than $1.8 million," she says, "and the company has commitments for pilots in 23 cities. Despite her company's recent successes, Rothman is all business. In 2 weeks, she's headed to Pawtucket, Rhode Island, where she will descend into a sewer to install 2 new sensors. It's not a part of the job she relishes, but she is totally committed. I don't even like going into gyms because they're all sweaty," she says, "so sewers are a step below that." The new sensors will augment 3 others installed in December that will track the effectiveness of a new project aimed at slowing down stormwater runoff. The project will add permeable pavement and green roofs to a part of the city that is covered with so much pavement that it is 97% impervious to water. It's a project that wouldn't have happened without the Sustainability Accelerator. "We've known for a long time that tech can make a big difference in conservation," says the Conservancy President Brian McPeak. "This is an experiment in figuring out how we can better leverage technology to solve conservation problems, and an experiment that is off to a great start." We've reached the end of our program for this week. Please join us again next week for the Environment Program. This is the Audio Information Network of Colorado.
If you enjoyed this program, please register for our free services at www.aincolorado.org or by calling 303-786-7777.